Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Stuart Thompson. Well, I'm not broadcasting live from the gatehouse tonight. I'm broadcasting live from home tonight. I'm comfortable on my couch and sitting back. But I have a pretty good topic tonight. Well, what can I say? It's not going to be easy for most. So a little bit of a trigger warning here. And another thing I should say right off the hop. I'm not here as a therapist or a psychologist or a doctor or PhD or anything like that. I'm only here on my own experiences through my healing process at the Gatehouse, which I've talked about now for, I can't believe it. I'm going up 4 years that I've been doing this. But nevertheless, so like I say, I'm not here to offer you advice or anything. I'm only here offering you my experiences. I have all this time that I've been here, and I'm grateful for the for my listeners who have listened, and I'm happy to say that I've had around 3,000 listens in the last 4 years, so I'm really, really proud of that. And I've stuck around. I haven't stopped doing this. So I have lots of good things to say. Some stuff you'll agree with, maybe, and some stuff you won't agree with me. But nevertheless, I've stuck it out here, and I keep advocating for childhood sexual abuse. To stop, to eradicate it, and also, more importantly, to help other survivors get through their process, their healing process. And depending where you are in the world, or if you're lucky to be in the Toronto area like I am, in Toronto, Ontario, Canada, where I am, well, I have the Gatehouse to come and to talk about my experiences where other places you might not have. So I love sharing my experiences through my healing journey, and I feel it's very, very vital to share this kind of stuff. And also, too, which is very, very important as well, my message is to you as well, is you're not alone. There's many, many, many of us out there, both women and men both, and we're suffering, and there's nobody really to talk to. So I hope you're listening to this, and I hope you get something out of this, and at least something to take away. At least knowing that you're not alone, and hopefully you can relate to my experiences, to what I talk about, or have talked about it in the past. And I'm going to continue doing so. I've been a little lax there for a little while, and I probably have not done a good job a couple of times, and I've done a good job, you know, most of the time. So I'm kind of been all over the map, is what I guess what I'm trying to say. And probably because I, you know, going through my own healing journey myself, and some days I am probably just really, really emotionally tired in many, many ways, not just from my work, but just from just trying to make it day by day, and kind of like what I'm going to be talking about tonight, some of the things I have to deal with in my daily survival to help me to do the things that I do. And I'm sure a lot of you that are listening to this will definitely relate to what I'm talking about. And the thing is, though, some of the stuff I talk about is really so taboo, and who can you really talk to about it? Well, as you can see from my posting tonight, I'm speaking about suicide, and I'm talking about boundaries, and I'm going to be talking about trust. Well, they're all kind of related, I guess, in some ways, but in my recovery, I've had to kind of incorporate boundaries, and I've had to incorporate trust. You know, there's probably a few other things on there that I haven't even mentioned on my posting in regards to how I got to be where I am now, and what keeps me going, and where, you know, like, really, what is this all about? And what am I getting out of this? Or well, should I say, also on my posting as well, I wonder day to day, I go to bed with, I have all these questions in my head, and I wonder, well, why am I still doing what I'm doing? You know, and why do I keep fighting to keep, you know, moving on? Well, it's really, really worth it, I guess, to put it in context really, really quickly, and without getting into a long, drawn-out story about it. But there is a lot more to it, obviously, involved in just stating what I've stated. But nevertheless, it is a fight daily, and it does require a lot of, sometimes it does require a lot of thought, so I don't go astray. And some of the things I do, well, such as now that I facilitated the Gatehouse, doing men's and co-ed groups, and hell, I do a lot of stuff there. And not only that, but now I also part of the assist program, and I'm now a facilitator along with Brad Hutchins, a guy that works at the Gatehouse as well. and we together do this program, and which we are expanding on now to even more so. But I guess what I'm trying to say as well is, well, how do I do it every day? How do I, you know, I have those questions as I've talked about. I struggle with suicide ideation pretty much daily. I mean, yes, I think I do. I probably even get it less frequently than I do. But when I do get them, when I do get those thoughts, and where I get them sporadically, day by day, sometimes, and then I don't, it can be really, really frustrating and daunting. You know, knowing that I'm going to think like that, or I am thinking like that, and it is very, very physically and emotionally draining in many, many, many ways. And then to focus on your daily things during the day, not just the day, but then, you know, you go home and you want to kind of shut the world off and just kind of chill out and not think about work. You don't want to think about anything. But yet I seem to dive into many, many different things and to keep myself busy. Well, I guess some people could say, well, you know, well, maybe you're just keeping busy and well, you don't have to think about those things. Well, I guess in some aspects I probably am, and that's maybe, you know, maybe I guess a good thing, but at the same time, I'm not really a lazy person to begin with, and I'm really not one for sitting around, and it's hard to do for me. The way I was brought up, and I've always been, I go on old school work ethics. You know, I'm a baby boomer, and I guess that's just the way we were brought up, just to be that way and to work and to, you know, just to do our thing and not just sit around and nothing. Anyway, that's the way I was brought up. But today I'm going to be talking, like I say, about suicide boundaries and trust and probably a whole bunch of other things included into it that are all very much related to that. But how do you survive daily and being a man and have those thoughts of suicide ideation? And then none of that, but how do I facilitate teaching suicide prevention? So that would, I don't know if that's, you know, I don't know if that's, how would you say, I'm not sure if that would be confusing for some people or not confusing for some people. Not that it really should matter coming from my point of view, or rather from my thought process, because really when it comes right down to it, I just go ahead and I do it. And yet I don't look for those kind of answers from anybody, and then nor do I ever talk about it. So how could I, you know, even come up with that thought, you know, or the conception that I'd be thinking that way? So it does derive a lot of questions, as I've talked about right from the beginning, and it does drive me also to go to bed thinking about all those questions and yet really not having any answers. And again, yet I still go ahead and I do this. So where do I draw my perseverance and my drive to do all this sort of thing? Well, that would really take some soul searching, I think, on anybody's part to figure out how you get this kind of energy and thought and motivation, self-motivation. Not only that, but feeling like, you know, with that suicide ideation when I talk about suicide ideation, what about all the other thoughts that are attached to it? Okay, well, on my heading, I talked about boundaries and I talked about trust. Well, one of the things I didn't throw in there was about self-worth or just loving yourself, for example, and self-worth, right? So those sort of things would always fall into play. Though those are kind of hidden and underneath, I think for the most part, a lot of times that's what ends up happening. I may say to myself, and I've heard other people doing it to themselves as well, but so I know this is common amongst us childhood sexual abuse survivors or anybody who has experienced some sort of really crazy trauma in their lives, throughout their lives or in the past or recently, wherever you may be, and you may feel this way. And, well, this is, of course, where the trust comes in. Well, when you have those sort of feelings, you really don't trust anybody and you really don't want to share your thoughts as you fear you might be, judged or told what to do or what you should say, or hell, even worse than that, if you, like with the suicide ideation, you could even be hospitalized, depending on what the other person may be thinking and not really truly understanding what you're thinking and feeling at that time, and not realizing that maybe, you know, at that particular moment, you just maybe need someone to talk to. All those sort of things come into play. And really, for myself as a survivor, not only of childhood sexual abuse, but also I am a survivor of, you know, of a few attempts myself of trying to commit suicide. So I have a really good understanding, you know, personally, anyway, on what I feel and what I don't feel, and then the thought process behind it, whether it be in a drug-induced way, an alcohol-induced way, or in a total clear thought, clear-minded sort of point of view where I have no other influences, you know, such as I've stated, or people in the background telling me what I should be thinking, or how, you know, telling me how I should be, you know, how I should be feeling or shouldn't be feeling. And so I have, you have those factors as well. You might want to consider when thinking about these things for yourself, that is. So it really, well, it kind of brings me to this thought. And this is a quote by Gabby Marte from he's a PhD psychologist. In fact, if you go to TED Talks, you can find Gabe Maté on there, and he's a clinical psychologist, and he deals with addictions. And quoting Gabe, he when a person is encouraged to be in touch with and express his deepest feelings, insecure knowledge that he will not be rejected, criticized, nor expected to be different. Some kind of rearrangement or sorting out of the process often occurs within the mind, which brings it to a sense of peace, a sense that the depths of the well of truth have really been reached. So, taking that quote in mind, really kind of has me thinking. You know, I've seen this quote before, and when I thought about this topic tonight, I kind of reflected back to this comment, and I don't always think of this quote, mind you, when I am trying to figure out in my head what the hell is going on with myself and where I'm going with these thoughts, and or where I'm not going with these thoughts, which is most of the time ends up being the case. But yet I still persevere and push ahead and move forward. And in that process, I continuously challenge myself to, you know, do whatever, whether it be volunteering at the Gatehouse or the suicide intervention, as I talked about, amongst other things, which I haven't even mentioned. You know, even at home, which I'm not afraid to talk about either, which I'll say, like, for example, what I do for self-care. What I do on my Tuesday nights, which I've done since November, or rather September of last year, which I've done for actually probably 7 years that I've been at the Gatehouse, is, well, especially in the last few years, because I've looked after it myself, but other than I had some help this year, is that I run a bowling league. And it's a 5-pin bowling league where I live. And, well, this year I was really, really good and kept the numbers really kind of low. In other years, I've had upwards of over 50 people playing in a league in a year, and I take care of it all myself. I arrange the, you know, the christening party, the banquet, you know, trophies, everything, all that kind of stuff. And now it also involves keeping track of the tournaments that are coming up as being a part of the Ontario 5-Pin Bowling Association. And therefore, there's a lot of paperwork involved in that as well. So thank God I had some help with that this year. But still, nevertheless, I've pretty much managed it on my own all this time. And yet, I keep going and I keep focused. And then, well, here, let me throw my work on top of that as well, which sometimes can be pretty crazy as well, as far as, you know, thinking about what I'm doing and being safe so I don't get hurt. I do work from extreme heights sometimes, and sometimes I don't. And sometimes I just work on the ground on a computer, and where the only thing that's going to get hurt is my fingers and my eyes from looking at the screen, and my fingers from typing too crazy, which I don't do anyway. But nevertheless, I think you're getting my point. Well, so which kind of brings me to this too. I mentioned this in the conversation, and I talked about being a man. So being a man and having those thoughts and talking about this sort of thing, well, as I understand, being a man, you don't talk about this stuff. And we are, you know, I'll put it this way. Being a man and talking about this stuff, it means a lot of things, or it could mean a lot of things, depending on how you take it. Like, for example, well, it means I'm lesser of a man by talking about this stuff. It means that I don't have any kahunas, if I could put it in man terminology, or I don't have any, the strength to show that I'm a man. Well, I'm kind of beg to differ on some of those details now, as I've so-called been pointed out all these years, and yet I seem to keep doing what I'm doing, and yet I've not been quashed down by any other man just because I am doing it. I have to admit, though, that the silent treatment is all right too, but nevertheless, I do get some support from men, more so in the community that I'm involved in. Not so much through social media, because I still think that most men are really kind of petrified to talk about this sort of stuff. But I have an interesting article I'd like to share with you that I found tonight through Men's Health magazine. And it does talk about suicide and men and suicide. Oh, I just love coffee, and I'm sipping on coffee here. That's what I love about sitting at home on my couch. And I'm able to sit back, and I made my own brew, and this is wonderful. So I'm going to show this. Let me just come up, bring this up in my my Android device. And since I'm sitting here on my nice couch, and what can I say? It's very comfortable. And also, too, I decided not to do tonight, too, which I should have mentioned really quickly, is I am not on Periscope tonight. I thought about that tonight, and I decided not to bother. So I'm just going to let that go. I've got a little bit of CBC going in the background for music, which you might not even hear anyway, but I do have it going in the background. So this article I'm going to read to you is from the Men's Health. Not talking about mental health, killing men. So I'm quoting now Men's Health magazine, and it's written by Sean Evans. So I would encourage you to go on if after I'm done, and you go on to Men's Health magazine, and you will find this. So Sean quotes or writes. Let me just get right to the beginning of this. Okay, your mental health is inseparable from your physical health, not a revolutionary concept. But what is outstanding is the stigmatization that still surrounds men who dare to talk about their mental struggles. As we move into Mental Health Awareness Month, is May, which I've even posted on my Twitter site. In fact, let me just do something really, really quickly here. I'm going to just do this. And let me see if I can do this. I didn't realize I even set this up. Bear with me one second. I bet I have to sign on. Oh, it's too. Okay, well, I'm not obviously going to be able to do that, so. But anyway, I'm going to continue on with this article. And, okay, as a move into Mental Health Awareness Month is May, and we hope to change that. Men who are vocal about any kind of mental issues can be diminished, sorry, can be, excuse me, dismissed as weak or as inferior, as I pointed out. As flawed, broken guys who are more likely to be ostracized for their honesty instead of rewarding for their bravery. So kind of like what I'm talking about as far as, well, I might as well have the silent treatment, right? So okay, where am I? Okay, flawed are guys who are likely to be ostracized or for their honesty are instead rewarded for their bravery, and instead affording a fellow man compassion, we mock and belittle and turn a blind eye. We freely spit the phrase "man up," as you are gender alone. Should you surface to guide through your darkness, or worse, a non-challengeable response? Well, that sucks. It's kind of like I'm talking about the silent treatment. Then change the subject to talking about feelings. It's just so real. What is real is the fact that 9% of men's experience depression on a daily basis. That more than 6 million men. Even if we understand that depression feels like we rarely admit that that's the culprit. We lie, we say we tried, or we're just cranky. more than 3 million men with anxiety daily, of 3.5 million diagnosed with schizophrenia by the age of 30. And more than 90% are men. There are estimated to be 10 million men in the U.S. who will suffer from eating disorder in their lifetime. Our own style of grooming in editor Louis Bergana eloquently and touchingly shared his battle with bulimia. We retreat from friends, instead drown sorrows in numbing substances. One out of every five men will develop alcohol dependency during his life. Male suicide is rising at such an alarming rate it has been classified as a silent epidemic. It's the seventh leading cause of death for males. That's staggering statistic. Drill down into the numbers of suicide, second most common cause of death on every age group from men 10 to 39. This macho attitude of suffering your feelings down or ignoring them is inadequate or downright dangerous. It's okay not to have your shit together. It's okay to feel depressed. It's okay to feel overwhelmed. It's okay to be sad. It's okay to be anxious. It's okay to be scared. It's okay not to have anything figured out, to feel in a wave of uncertainty and crashing over you, and to know which way is up or your next gulp of air will come. These are perfectly normal feelings that every man experiences, and it's okay to talk about it. What's not okay is suffering in silence. A few courageous men have led the change to exposing their plights to the rest of us. Singer Zane Malka openly discussed his struggle with anxiety and his battle with an eating disorder. The Cleveland Cavaliers' Kevin Love penned an open titled "Everyone is Going Through Something," chronicles his panic attacks. When Dwayne The Rock Johnson recently revealed his battle with depression after his mother attempted suicide when he was young, when he was a teenager, his words struck a chord with us. It took me a long time to realize, but the key is to not to be afraid to open up. Especially us dudes have tendency to keep it in. You're not alone. You're not alone this month. We'll be bringing you a number of fantastic pieces and features to help shine the light on aspects of men's mental health, curated by our incredible deputy editor, E.J. Dixonson. We'll cover depression and anxiety, how to recognize the symptoms of each, and what to do next. We'll drive into the world of postpartum mood disorders for men, an issue that is most common, more common than you think, but no one ever speaks about. We'll explore bipolar disorder through the lens of Andy Irons, a sufferer who fought his illness by self-medicating so as much that it could lead him to ultimately his passing. We'll examine the link between gut health and mental health. Are there foods you can eat that are genuinely good for your mental health well-being? We'll talk about dysphoria, a condition where a former cover star, Dan Stein, faced as well as to deal with one part of your body which you simply wish you could change. You're not alone there either. Arnold Schwarzenegger, he could look at a mirror and wanted to throw up. Well, look at the horrible trend our policy agencies are pushing cops and asking for mental help. How could good officers have to superstitiously seek counseling outside their insurance paying for their therapy and medications out of pocket? At least their badge and gun be removed, and we'll all discuss science with a male anger. Why and how psychological and environmental elements can be contributed to making men so violent and destructive. Together, our voices can fight stigma. The real men don't talk about their troubles. In doing so, we can usher a positive conversation, replace the long-standing detrimental silence. And this is by Sean Evans, the digital director of Men's Health. So I would suggest you go on to the Men's Health line and check it out. You got nothing to lose. So there's a lot of truth in what Sean is saying, and I can probably relate in a lot of ways too, myself as well, included as well, in this battle that I deal with daily, and that kind of sums it up, kind of like what I'm talking about as far as some of my questions are concerned, in regards to, well, how can I go to bed every night and, you know, not have all these answers, and how am I not driving myself crazier than what I probably already am already? Well, that's kind of a gross exaggeration, but nevertheless, I go to bed very full sometimes with my brain, and I certainly don't always want to talk about it, because what's somebody else going to tell me about myself that I don't already know, right? Or rather, what's somebody going to tell me about myself that I already kind of know better, right? Or, I mean, nobody knows me better than me is, I guess, really the bottom line. And discovering that is, it's been quite a battle. And at least I'm here talking about it, and I'm brave enough to talk about it, I guess. Or rather, I have the courage to talk about it, as where most men will not talk about it. So I really, if you're listening and you're a man, I would really encourage you to, try to find the courage to find somebody to talk to about this. There's people out there that are not going to judge you or, man bash you just because you are a man and you're feeling this way. There's plenty of men out there that feel this way as well. Don't get me wrong. You know, I may be feeling this way, and I've met lots of other men out there. You know, and I read some examples through the Men's Health magazine. These men are pretty goddamn macho, and who would want to mess with them anyway? So just because we're vulnerable and we speak about what we're feeling does not mean that we're a pushover, at least. In fact, it's the men I've talked about, I've mentioned, are pretty honorable men to begin with. And they're great examples for other men to move forward. Okay. I've talked lots about suicide and how it affects us as men. Well, let's talk a little bit about boundaries and trust and how does that kind of fall into what I've been talking about today. Well, I've always had before I came to the Gatehouse, I had pretty rigid boundaries. They were all over the map, and I had none towards myself and others. And, when I talk about boundaries towards myself and others, I'm talking more on the level of, this level in particular, about sharing about what I'm thinking and saying and feeling. So one of the things I learned about having horrible boundaries is, especially when I was quite a bit younger, actually in my 20s and even a little bit younger than that, and probably stemmed from my childhood, it extended from my childhood sexual abuse. And what happened, and I remember this clear as a bell, and I remember I did this lots as a child, even growing up, and I remember I not that I would talk about my childhood sexual abuse, but I would talk about anything, about my lousy family life. About my father, I would talk about that stuff all the time with other people, even other men, and thought nothing of it, right? My point being is that as that example I gave, and even going into my 20s, and I would, and it wasn't always just about my father. That was just an example of what I would use as my, I was an angry child, so I would always talk about my father because he was never around. So it was easy to bark about that. But the thing is that I remember about that particular part, about talking about that stuff, I remember other men never, ever, if they talked about my father in any way, I certainly never heard about it. And if they had anything negative to say about it, I definitely never would have heard it negative about that, anything to say about that either. So I guess that really kind of made it easy for me to talk about it, I guess, in a lot of ways. And And whenever I did talk about it, any of these men I did talk about it with are people that I knew, mostly men, because that's what I'm talking about, obviously. They would never, they shared it with my father. I certainly never heard about it. And my father, being the type of person that he was, well, I'm sure he would have said something. He wasn't the type of man to just to sit back and, you know, not take what I would say or anything, or would take what anybody would say, being the tough man that he was. So, and he had very strong boundaries in regards to what his children said and did anyway, as far as I could remember anyway, whenever he was around anyway. So he was very, very, very strict and a solid man in regards to his discipline and not around the house when he was around, I guess is what I'm trying to say. But anyway, that's a long story, and I'm not going to get into talking about my father, but it kind of relates to what I'm talking about in regards to boundaries or concern, where my boundaries were really not really in play in regards to just being able to blab and talk about anything and not really worry about what anybody says. But that carried through from my childhood right into as an adult. And as an adult, well, no, not that I ever talked about my childhood sex abuse, but I would talk just about anything, what I was thinking, feeling. Suicide was the other thing I definitely would never talk about. So childhood sex abuse and suicide were two things I would never talk about at all. But I would talk about anything else. So when I told him my boundaries, well, I had horrible boundaries, you know, in regards to, you know, people I hung out with and, you know, decisions I made and all kinds of things. But I always had horrible, horrible boundaries is my point. So I know that when I came to the gatehouse, I started learning about boundaries. And this is really what I'm going to. And I know I've talked about this many times. I've talked about boundaries many times before. And, you know, what are good boundaries? What are bad boundaries? But anyway, I'm talking about just my own boundaries. And I'm also talking about boundaries about expression. But my expression and boundaries were very, very rigid and all over the map. And one of the beautiful things I learned when I came to the gatehouse is about that. And along with that, I learned as well is that with my boundaries, I had to learn about trust. And well, I guess where I learned the best about boundaries and trust was probably at the gatehouse, because that would be the only place that I could ever actually ever talk about my suicide ideation, as we're talking about suicide tonight. More importantly, where that came from, which was from my childhood sexual abuse, to the thoughts that I had to brought me to doing that. So, you know, and with that process of learning about trust and boundaries, more importantly, the boundaries before I got my trust, I guess I kind of went in that order. If I'm going to put it on a sheet and look at it and say, okay, well, what came first? Well, I would say my boundaries came first, and then the trust sort of went along with that after that, in regards to, you know, being vocal and who I can talk to and who I can't talk to. And I think most people would tell you that know me, would tell you that I have pretty strong boundaries right now. And I don't really, as before, I was really, really a good yes person. I'm not so much of a yes person anymore, though I do still take on an awful lot, falling back to what I've talked about previously to where I am now. But I still have strong boundaries, and I know when to say no, and I can be quite firm about that, especially outside outside the gatehouse, outside my home, even in the bowling league that I run. So I've learned some really, really good, valuable things over the years and since being at the gatehouse. And one of the things I really, really gained on is my boundaries. You see, this is one of the things I had to learn. Like, this was probably one of the hardest things I had to learn. You know, never mind the trust and the other things, but I mean, I'm looking at the top three, and the boundaries was probably one of the toughest things I had to really learn. Where do I fit in these boundaries? Where do I draw the line on, you know, what I think or what I say? So that created some new challenges too. You know, what is good thing to say around people and what is a bad thing to say around people? And then kind of this kind of falls into place. Well, where does the trust fall in? Well, that's where the trust comes in, obviously. Who do I feel safe talking about my experiences with? Whether it be bad or good. Who, just because I'm talking about suicide ideation, that doesn't mean I'm going to go and do it. It just means I have those thoughts. Well, some people, or a certain percentage of the population might think just because I'm thinking about it, just means I'm just automatically going to do it. Well, respectively, for what I've learned from doing the assist program and doing suicide intervention myself and doing it many times, doing the suicide intervention, I've done it actually many times myself now, not just in others, but even for myself. Well, notice how I threw that in there even for myself. Now, when I went and did the assist program to learn how to be facilitator, when I went and did the assist training just to learn how to do suicide prevention, never mind the training, that was a pretty big thing for me. Not only with my personal experiences and the loss of my brother from suicide, and actually now I can say, and I've known many other people to do it as well. And that's not something we really generally talk about, at least not in open and around your friends and in public. Although I am sitting here right now and I'm talking about it on Blog Talk Radio, Put Some Transformation, and I'm talking about it quite freely, without any guilt or shame whatsoever, and really not giving a damn what anybody thinks, whether a person likes it or not. I that's just my attitude. And that kind of rebellious kind of an attitude, I guess, in regards to this topic, but I feel it's necessary. Again, that's another topic all in itself. But nonetheless, I'm here, sitting here, talking about it, as where many may not be. But anyway, to boundaries and trust. So I've struggled through, the last 7 years, which I've been at the Gatehouse, and where I've learned a lot of stuff about boundaries. And like I've stated, my boundaries have gotten really, really, really strong and towards others. But learning boundaries and which were bad and which were good have been quite a task. And I've had my struggles, to be where I am at, almost daily, like I've talked about. And suicide ideation is what I'm talking about, has always been one of the things. So by incorporating my boundaries and my trust, I'm talking about personal stuff, right? I mean, yes, I want to trust other people to talk about it, but I don't always have other people to talk about it. And then having good boundaries to understand, or to have the judgment to know who I can talk to and not talk to is also a really, really big thing, right? Well, I think I pretty much, over this time that I've been to the Gatehouse, and even in my own time of self-reflection and moving forward, I've had a lot of time to think about it and how this is going to work or not going to work. And some of it was trial and error. Sometimes I would do things, then regret it after, realize that I didn't set a proper boundary in regards to how I could have or should have. And again, I'm using coulds and shoulds, and they really don't apply, but in this case it did, because I applied it and learned from that. So sometimes doing the coulds and shoulds are also good learning curves in your process of trying to figure things out. We often talk about, we should or we could have. Well, I could have said that or I should have done that, but really that's past tense really when it comes down to it. And what I said, which was most important, is it's a lived learning experience and taking that and moving forward. And that's kind of what I've been doing all this time and through the time of the 7 years that I've been at the Gatehouse. And, the assist training is the one thing, is another thing that I put as a component as to my own personal healing. Not only, as I've stated, to help others in suicide intervention, but also to help myself. It's funny, I go through day by day, and yet I seem to, I get those thoughts, and yet I still struggle through the day, and I get through it, and You know, it's funny. You know, I'm trying to look for some kind of scientific answer that will, you know, adequate what my thought process is, but it just doesn't happen. Other than the fact that I'm just doing it, right? And I try to rationalize even my thoughts of suicidal ideation to my process, and that doesn't work. I still get them, and I still feel like crap. And I have to find other ways to get myself out of that funk, you know, such as, well, bowling, as I talked about, for the league that I run. My partner, for example, that's a great, great, great help for me right now as well. And being around people that are positive, and not being around people that will, being around people that will help me go down on myself, if that makes any sense. So, like negative people, I guess, really is what I'm trying to say. So learning those things was pretty hard, and it took me a long time. And when I talk about having good boundaries now, in regards to who I hang with, who I don't hang with, is so crucial. Me being able to come home and do what I do, well, I guess it gives me time to be an introvert, and I'm much part-time introvert. That's really what's all it is, and I don't really go out and, well, I don't have a personal buddy or anything like that, I don't hang out with men and do other things, other than even in the summer when I play baseball. Or one thing I really do with men is when I play football or soccer, and that's just men. And years ago I used to do it as a co-ed thing, but now it's just men, men over 50. And then, but the baseball that I partake in, as far as an experience of getting out and mingling with people and trying to trust people again, is a great thing for me to do too as well. And that's another thing that I've done to help socialize myself, and to take all the other things that I had as memories of being bad or bad experiences away from it. Especially when I've incorporated alcohol and drugs into the topic as well. Now, well, I had to realize that, well, first off, well, the drugs and alcohol, well, I'm sure they were a small part of it. Not only what I might have consumed myself, but realizing that other people are coming from a different place. And even though they might have done that or be doing that at the time that I'm around, and they may say some stupid things or do stupid things, which I probably have done myself, you know, repeatedly over the years, and really taken no accord of it, after the fact. Maybe I might have after the fact, but I guess the beauty of it now is that, yes, with my boundaries and trusting where they are, I pick and choose who I'm going to be a fool with. If that may sound kind of funny and odd, but that's really the truth of it. You know, I still like to go out and have a few beverages and enjoy myself. I choose not to really, you know, get intoxicated and hang around with people like that all the time, but as I know, it triggers me from my previous experiences, even as a child. I know one of my abusers, well, again, when I think about it, well, it was usually enraged by alcohol. Whenever he used to, you know, sometimes he would beat me before he would sexually abuse me to keep me to so I would keep my mouth shut, or after the fact, or he would scare me, and he'd do all kinds of things. But anyway, one of my abusers used to do that, and that was just a form of sexual grooming, of course, obviously. But nonetheless, that used to happen, and anyway. Things like that used to trigger me and send me off on a. I would get flashbacks from those times. And that may seem kind of crazy and odd, but that's really what happened to me. I would get those kind of flashbacks. And it would put me right back to that time. And I never really understood why or how or what. But that's what used to happen to me. I would get into that and be around people like that. And then I would see violent people as well, or people acting out. And that would just trigger me, right? Like there's no tomorrow. And I would, then that's usually when I would, that's usually when my, well, things would kick in, and I wasn't a good person all around, even after the fact, even days after the fact, I wasn't good, because I was, it would put me back to those times. And I never really had any, well, I did not have any good grounding techniques or ways of bringing myself back to, you know, to the present. So I'll be stuck in flashback mode is what I'm trying to say. And it would sometimes take me days to get out of that, right? Sometimes even weeks that's, you know, until I found the gatehouse, I was able to figure out how to do that and establishing, you know, ways of mindfulness and bringing myself back to the present were one of the things I had to learn by going there in order for me to have some kind of control of what I'm thinking and feeling if I am around people like that, you know, and this would have been very, very helpful for me. And most people would not understand that, I wouldn't think, unless you've been through this experience. You might understand or relate to it. You know, I'm only bringing alcohol into the factor as being a factor of when I was around it. That's what would happen to me. Then off to La La Land I would go. But now, from the things that I've learned from the High Gatehouse, it's allowed me to I have a handle on it. And what I mean by I have a handle on it, if I find that I'm around people that are triggering me to that level, well, now I can just bring myself back to the present by just simply, well, I mentioned in the past about what I used to do. I would, like, for example, I would put an animate object in my pocket to ground myself again, to bring myself back, especially when I was triggered. So things like that, I don't even do that anymore. I don't have to do that anymore. I just bring my mind off to a place far, far away, and I sit there with a smile, and I take it, and if I am triggered, it doesn't, not that it still doesn't bother me, but the biggest difference now is that I don't go running. Excuse me, running was always a really, really good practice of mine that's what I would do when I would get flashbacks, really bad flashbacks, and that's what I would do. I would run. Or even my nightmares sometimes, I would wake up in the middle of the night, or I'd have a really, really horrible sleep, or I'd have days where I'd have sleeps where I'd have constant nightmares. Well, I don't get that so much anymore, and for lots of reasons why I don't. I still get them from time to time. I've talked about it with my partner, and it really depends on a lot of things, whether I get them or not. Whether it be my time, could even be my time at the gatehouse talking about stuff, for example, which is, I guess, is a good thing. And I've even mentioned, even a few years back, I've even tried to alter my dreams by a form of meditation. And don't get me wrong, the form of meditation I was doing did not alter my dream completely, because the outcome was always still the same. All I could do to meditate and to improve my outcome of that horrible nightmare is, in my nightmare, I've tried to incorporate that when I do have those type of nightmares, that I go into like a meditation, I put myself into a peaceful feeling, where reminding myself that I'm not in that spot at that time, and I'm able to, you know, to move forward. Now, that was a very difficult thing for me to learn, knowing that it wasn't real and it was the past and I'm actually in the present. But whenever I get those nightmares or the flashbacks like I'm talking about, I would go into panic mode so bad, and all I would want to do is run. I would incorporate some sort of form of addiction to cope along with that. And I would more than likely, in most cases, depending on where I am and what time and place, I would have isolated and disassociated. So those are the things that would happen to me. But through being shown ways through the gate at the gatehouse, I've been able to find my way through all that sort of stuff, and to where I can manage those feelings and thoughts. But you know, one word I have not mentioned through this whole conversation is that I learned from the gatehouse is a new sense of awareness. And that sense of awareness is allowed me to create boundaries, trust, understanding that when I'm feeling bad or when I'm feeling good, you know, understanding that when I'm angry, which is all right, as long as you're respectful, and everybody has a right to be angry, as long as it's, you know, healthy angry and it doesn't hurt anybody else, obviously, and doesn't hurt yourself too as well. But those are all the things that I needed to learn in order to move forward. you know, moving forward, as I keep pointing out, it's been really a tough go. But in my post, I said, I've stated that it's been more than worth it. And every day I discover little things about myself, although I'm not very good about, you know, I'm not very good about self-love, I guess is really the right terminology to use what I'm talking about now. I still have a very, very hard time accepting the good things that I've done or I'm doing. And I really don't spend a whole lot of time thinking about that stuff. I just believe and think that these things need to be done. And for some reason, I have this opportunity to do this, or I've been chosen, if I can use that word. And even in saying that, it's just kind of a gift to be able to give back what I've received. Really is what it comes down to. It's not being so much as chosen. Well, I guess I'm chosen that they're allowing me to do this, but the fact that I'm able to, you know, I'm able to give back what was given to me. And I've been given a lot of things, you know. You know, I guess the biggest thing that's been given to me is a form of, at least some form of self-respect towards myself. You know, I talk about self-love. Well, that's been probably the biggest one of the, probably the, you know, I talked about the top three. Well, I gave you boundaries as being my number three. And really, trust is really number two for me. And number one would be self-love. So when I talk about the top three, really that's what I'm talking about. You know, and learning those things are, you know, learning to do those things and apply those things can be quite a battle for anybody who's trying to discover these things, trying to discover this for themselves. Well, I've given you some great examples of self-discovery in regards to moving forward. I am a man, and which makes it, I guess in some aspects, it makes it harder, as I keep hearing and seeing, or not hearing and not seeing, because, you know, being silent and not talking about it are pretty heavy things. So I think I'm going to leave you with this, and call today, and leaving you with the thought that you can move forward, and you don't have to stay stuck in the past. And I want to say thanks. Have a good night. Hey, how's it going?
Good, how's it going?
Not bad at all.